allergy season is in full swing here in the Middle Tennessee area, and it has affected me greatly. But a lesser man would complain, because I have college football news to share with you all tonight, even on the Memorial Day weekend, which, by the way, I hope you are having a great Memorial Day weekend, and most importantly, remembering why we have the weekend, the Memorial Day weekend. I personally can't think of anything more patriotic than Memorial Day and college football, and especially when you combine the two. So here's a special edition, a Memorial Day edition of the Air Raid with Parker Kelly on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game across the Game Nashville Sports Network. Listen, the truth is, for all of my day one listeners, you know that college football, it sleeps for no one. There is news constantly breaking. And let me tell you, we are going to break it down right here on the Air Raid. So Tennessee passed a law recently, and that might have the University of Tennessee as well as Vanderbilt in some hot water with the SEC and Greg Sankey. Is Greg Sankey threatening to kick Tennessee and Vandy out of the SEC? We're going to talk about that. And I've been seeing some things on the interweb about the potential that USC and Notre Dame might get canceled. I hope that's not true, but if it is, I'm going to share my thoughts on that, as well as everything else that is listed here on my show outline. And if you could see what I'm looking at right in front of me, which I know you can't because this is a podcast, but we have a jam-packed show in store. So just buckle up and let's just sit back and let's just enjoy the college football news together. Some of what I have to share may not be as enjoyable, but we got to get through it because, again, college football, it rests for no one. Let's go ahead and start with the news, the big news, that the state of Tennessee and Governor Bill Lee signed a state bill that paves the way for state schools like the University of Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Memphis, MTSU, Middle Tennessee State, schools like that, and their affiliated collectives to break house settlement-related rules and prevent college sports' new enforcement entity from penalizing those schools. So, if I can kind of dumb that down, basically, the state of Tennessee passed a law that allows schools in the state to not abide by this new house settlement that is getting ready to be passed. This law is taking a massive shot at this new plan to police the new rev share era that we are about to wander into. So this has drawn massive headlines, since the news broke, because there have been officials from the Big Ten Conference, the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC that are composing a first-of-its-kind draft intended to prevent universities from using their state laws to violate these new enforcement rules. So basically, the Power Four conferences, what they're doing is they're creating a draft that prevents schools like Tennessee, schools like Vanderbilt, schools like Memphis from using their state laws to break the national laws that are getting ready to be enforced by this new enforcement entity. Now, we've talked about this a lot on the show, and especially early on when we first got this podcast started. The state of Tennessee is trying to get ahead of the curve a little bit, because if you think about all the legal drama that the University of Tennessee specifically has been in over the past couple of years, you think all the way back to Jeremy Pruitt and the paying recruits before it was legal. You know, Jeremy Pruitt giving recruits cash in McDonald's bags, that gained a lot of traction when it actually happened. You think about the hot water that Tennessee was in when that happened. Now, obviously, since that did happen, Tennessee went about it the right way. But then you fast forward in time a little bit to when Nico Iamaliava was new to campus in Knoxville, and the NCAA tried to come after the University of Tennessee for quote-unquote illegally recruiting Iamaliava to campus, because Tennessee was also ahead of the curve in the fact that they were the first ones to give a major deal to a high-profile high school recruit. The NCAA tried to come after Tennessee then. Tennessee, Virginia, they took the NCAA to court, kneecapped the NCAA in court. I mean, who hasn't at this point? And the University of Tennessee basically set a new standard across college athletics by winning that case. And then as of a few months ago, when Iamaliava had that whole fiasco about wanting more money, transferring to UCLA, all that jazz, Tennessee was in national headlines once again. I think Tennessee is trying to get, the state of Tennessee rather, is trying to get ahead of the curve by signing this bill. So, because, to be honest, nobody knows what's going to happen with this new enforcement entity. What this new enforcement entity is wanting is for the Power Four conferences and really all of college football to agree to abide by the rules that they propose. Even though nobody knows what the rules are going to be. So the state of Tennessee, knowing that the way forward is very foggy, very unclear, they're trying to get ahead of the curve by signing this bill. Now, on the other hand, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. There are a lot of college athletic directors. There are a lot of conference commissioners, conference leaders, that have been advocating for a national standard, because as we all know, it's the wild, wild west in college athletics, and each state has their own set of rules kind of regarding NIL and things to various extents like that. What these leaders are wanting are a national standard of rules that everybody follows, regardless of state. I remember in high school, when I was playing high school football, I remember we had a coach, and he was trying to develop more leaders on the team. And he would often tell us that even if what the leader, you know, if there was a leader that kind of arised out of the group, even if what the leader was saying was wrong, it was still better that everybody followed the leader and they all sync together than you have a leader, but everyone is kind of doing their own thing. So a lot of these leaders are wanting a national set of rules that everybody follows. The problem with that is, no matter what the rules are, even if there are a national set of rules and things get a lot better as far as not everybody is doing their own thing, there are still going to be teams, there's still going to be coaches, there's still going to be recruits, there's still going to be people out there that try to bend the rules, try to skirt the rules, or try to find a way to push the boundary as much as possible, because that literally happens in everyday life. That happens when you're when you're driving on the interstate, the speed limit may be 70, and you may try to go 75 to 76 to 77. This happens. No matter what it is, people are always going to try to push the rules. That's kind of the problem. Now, I also would like a national set of rules. So I understand this point of view. But Tennessee is trying to, the state of Tennessee is trying to be ahead of the curve because, frankly, I believe they're tired of being taken to court, having to go to court, having their name thrown around different courtrooms and the national spotlight. So that's kind of my whole view on this. Now, as far as if I think Tennessee and SEC, Vanderbilt, rather, are going to get kicked out of the SEC, I think that that is highly unlikely. One, because Tennessee, more so than Vanderbilt, Tennessee is a nationally known brand, and also the amount of revenue that that school brings into the SEC, Greg Sankey's not just going to kick Tennessee out because they're not going to follow this new enforcement entity. Now, I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen because, again, none of us know. But Tennessee's not going to get kicked out of the SEC just willy-nilly. And honestly, neither is Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt is not as much of a nationally known brand like Tennessee. They may not bring in as much revenue as Tennessee either, but they still produce some revenue. And to Greg Sankey, to people who run the SEC, that's still important. So I don't see Tennessee and Vanderbilt just getting kicked out of the SEC because, to be honest, nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows what this new enforcement entity is going to look like. Heck, a lot of us don't even know the name of the enforcement entity. So it's all going to be interesting, and we just got to sit back and watch. But that was the national headline that came out this week. I also had some thoughts on this college sports commission that has been kind of buzzing around the college athletics, not even just college football specifically, but the college athletics realm. So Nick Saban made an appearance on the Paul Feinbaum show a couple of weeks ago. And of course he was going to be asked about the college sports commission, which he was. And here's what Nick Saban had to say, quote, "I don't know a lot about the commission, first of all. And second of all, I don't think we need a commission," end quote. Interesting comments from the GOAT there, wouldn't you say? Now, his first comments go to show that the commission, at the time of when he said this, was in the very premature early stages. Now, as of a few days ago, the commission was actually put on pause by the White House. So the efforts have been paused. However, Cody Campbell, who is a Texas billionaire, he's also a booster to Texas Tech, him and Nick Saban and Donald Trump, those are the three names that, if you've been researching this commission, those are probably the three names that you've seen. Cody Campbell is one of the main ones leading the charge for this commission, and he's been in the process of trying to find members to be a part of this commission. So while the College Sports Commission effort to get it going, while the plans were paused by the White House, Cody Campbell is still working a little bit behind the scenes to find people to be a part of this commission. But nonetheless, it was paused by the White House. But, you know, his first comments were very interesting because Nick Saban said he didn't know a lot about the commission. And if he doesn't know a lot about the commission, nobody else does either. So I wanted to get to his second comment, though, about the part about not really needing a commission. Because he's implying something that a large majority of college football fans know what is wrong with the sport. We all know that college football, the people making the decisions for the sport are the people, the wrong people, and they have their hands on the wheel. Conference realignment, what's gotten out of hand with NIL and the transfer portal. Some of you have been very vocal about the 12-team playoff. I'm going to get into that in just a second. But the people who are ultimately making decisions don't really have the best interest of college football in mind. So what Nick Saban is implying is he's saying we shouldn't need this government intervention, but the wrong people have their hands on the wheel at the expense of the fans and the players. And notice how those last two words that I just said, the fans and the players, notice how when big-time decisions are made in those sport and in the sport, you don't really hear those two words, fans and players. But that's what make the fans and the players are what make this sport run. Yeah, you have superstar big-name coaches, but the coaches aren't the ones playing the games. It's the players. And the tradition, the pageantry, are what a lot of you, myself included, say we love about this sport. Who do you think is the backbone of the tradition, the pageantry? Who do you think is in the stands cheering every single Saturday in the fall? You and I, the fan. So every decision that is made about college football needs to have, first of all, the player, the ones that are the players, the ones that are actually playing the game, decisions need to be made with them in mind. And secondly, the people who are consuming the sport. Those are the two most important entities in college football. And every time there's a big decision that's made, notice how you never hear the words fans and players. It's never even brought up. Decisions need to be made with those two parties in mind. They need to be heavily involved and considered in this decision-making process. Now, I did think it was interesting because Nick Saban, he's said multiple times that he doesn't want to be the commissioner of college football, but he would love to be a consultant. He'd love to be an advisor for those who do want to be involved in the decision-making process, which I think is great because Nick Saban is a guy who has the best interest in mind for college football. And he's the greatest coach we've ever seen in the sport. I'd absolutely want him in an advisory role. So those are kind of my thoughts. Some later thoughts on the College Sports Commission that has been recently paused by the White House. But we move merrily along because isn't it just crazy? Because if you're covering college football in the when games aren't being played, you basically have to be a master's in business law because of, I mean, it seems like college football is primarily being played in the courtroom and secondarily out on the field, which is ridiculous. It should never be that way. And I hate talking about it just as much as you probably hate listening to it. But it had to be talked about because that's what's going on right now. But let's move on into a little bit more football talk. This quote, and I want to put this out there first and foremost. I love Matt Rhule. I love Matt Rhule, the head coach at Nebraska. There was a quote that he made recently about a 40-team playoff. I'm sure you've seen it. It made headlines across Twitter and Instagram. Now, I hope you weren't fooled. I hope you weren't fooled. I will admit, when I first saw the quote, I was fooled. But I went back and I listened to the whole clip, because if you just saw the quote in the graphic that On3 put out about the 40-team playoff and how Matt Rhule was calling for a 40-team playoff, you probably would have thought one thing. But if you go back and you listen to the clip, you realize that Matt Rhule was saying it in a joking manner, which he was, because I went back and I listened to the clip. But that's not really what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what he said after. So basically in this clip, he was asked by the people who cover Nebraska for On3. He was asked about what is best for Nebraska in terms of the playoff. Now, I'm not going to directly quote what he said, but I'm going to kind of freelance here. Basically, what Matt Rhule was saying was the more playoff spots available, the better it would be for Nebraska, because it rewards teams who play in leagues like the Big Ten, who play more conference games. Now, he didn't directly mention the SEC. This is just personally how I took it. This is my opinion on it. You're here to listen to my opinion, or else you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. It has been a big debate for a while. The Big Ten, they play 9 conference games. Meanwhile, the SEC plays 8. Matt Rhule views it as tougher, and it really depends. Views it as tougher because the Big Ten and Nebraska play 9 conference games. So basically, the more playoff spots that are available, that would reward more teams like Nebraska who are from the Big Ten who play a quote-unquote tougher schedule because they play 9 games. I took this as a kind of a shot at the SEC, because the SEC, as it is well known, plays 8 conference games. Now, I'm going to go back to what I said on the last episode of the podcast that I did. I would love to see the SEC play 9 games. Why? Because it's more quality football for the fans to consume. However, I understand why the SEC is playing 8 conference games. Because you have a little situation that happened in last year's 12-team playoff where Indiana was giving an at-large bid into the 12-team college football playoff. I believe they deserved it. However, if you're looking at strength of schedule, there were teams out there who had a tougher strength of schedule than Indiana. But what really helped Indiana to get into the playoff was their 11-1 record. So if the playoff committee really puts as much emphasis on record as it appears that they do, it helps that the SEC plays 8 conference games so that they can stack the other 4 games that they play in the regular season with easier opponents. Now, obviously, you have your exceptions like Texas. They're going on the road and playing at Ohio State. Oklahoma's hosting Michigan in week 2. Florida is playing at Miami. There are clear exceptions, right? Alabama, they're hosting Wisconsin. So there are some big-time non-conference games for the SEC this year. But playing 8 conference games versus playing 9 conference games, it makes sense as terms of you're wanting to get as many wins as you can, because the more wins that you have, the higher chance you have at making it into the playoff. Now, obviously, this playoff structure is going to change in 2026 because the Big Ten and the SEC are taking control of what the format is going to look like from that point moving forward. So if it does get to the point where the SEC and the Big Ten both get 4 automatic bids into a 14, into a 16 team, whatever, playoff, then I believe that's when the SEC will move to a 9-game conference schedule. I think we need to talk about the elephant in the room and what just happened. But as recently as, I believe it was announced on Friday, The 12-team college football playoff announced a change in their format. They are going to follow a straight seeding model. So instead of awarding the four highest-ranked conference champions with a first-round bye, now it is just going to be the four highest-ranked teams, regardless of conference, they're going to be the ones awarded a first-round bye. And the college football playoff is going to award the 12 highest-ranked teams. So it's going to follow a straight seeding format based on what the college football playoff committee's rankings are when they release their final rankings right before it's time for the playoffs. You know that I was never a fan of expansion. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know that I've not been a huge advocate of expanding the playoff, and I was never a huge advocate of the 12-team playoff. However, since it's here, there's no point in me complaining about it because we're not putting the toothpaste back in the tube, and ultimately it's college football at the end of the day. I love college football. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to watch it. This is better than what we had last year. So that is a step in the right direction, considering there is no going back in time. And it also is nice because in terms of revenue, the College Football Playoff Committee is still going to give teams, the four highest ranked conference champions, they're still going to get a share of the $8 million because they were a conference champion. So let's say you have a Boise State, for example, and they win the Mountain West, but they don't make the playoff. They're still going to get a share of the money because they won the Mountain West, even if they don't make the playoff. So I still think that this format is better than what it was because, one, it's straight seeding, and two, it still incentivizes teams to go out and win their conference championship. Even if they don't make the playoff, they still get a share of the money for doing so. So I definitely think that that is a step in the right direction. Now, I've had an idea for a while, and I want to hear your thoughts after I'm done with this episode. But real quick, let me remind you that if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Game Nashville podcast. Whether you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your fine listening materials, make sure to subscribe to the Game Nashville. That's where you will get each and every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly, so you never miss an episode. And you'll also get to see a lot of our other great podcasts that we have going on here at 102.5 The Game. Lots of great work being put out by a lot of my fellow coworkers. I highly encourage you to go listen to that. But also, please make sure you're listening to The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And also, please follow me on the socials. I'm at Instagram. I'm at Twitter, at Parker_Kelly10. You can follow me there. All right, let's get back into my idea. So the NFL had their schedule release a couple of weeks ago, and it always does really well in terms of engagement every single year because it takes place around the same time every year. It's the NFL offseason, and while there are no games being played, it gives NFL fans something to talk about. So I began thinking, what if college football did something similar? Now, you know that I believe college football and the NFL are two very separate entities. I love my college football Saturdays the way they are. I wouldn't change them for a thing. And I like my NFL football on Sundays. And I don't think the two should really intermix all that much because I believe that they are separate. And you know that I don't believe college football should try and recreate much of what the NFL does, because the NFL has found a way to sell themselves successfully on their own way, and I believe college football can be successful on their own terms as well. They don't necessarily have to intermix. But I think it's really a brilliant idea of what the NFL has done each and every year with the schedule release. So I began thinking, what if college football did something similar to that? Because it really seems like after the, you know, the national championship game is played, I encounter a lot of people who kind of tune out of college football, tune into something else until about, you know, mid-July. Then they start to tune back into to what's going on in college football. But I believe if you had a college football schedule release, like a big college football schedule release right after spring practice, I believe that that would do great in terms of engaging fans when college football games aren't being played. And I'm trying to think about this from a head coaching perspective. I listened to an interview, I believe it was with Kirby Smart, and it was actually with Josh Pate over at 24/7 and CBS Sports. Josh asked him, you know, how would you feel about, you know, a college football schedule release? Just a hypothetical question. And I believe a lot of these coaches, I mean, we've talked about that. We've talked about this, how college coaches already have so much on their plates in terms of recruiting guys from high school, recruiting guys out of the portal, making plans for spring practice. Yeah, they look at the schedule, but I'm sure it's not on the forefront of their mind in mid-April. But after, you know, the portal window closes, and after, you know, they sign their high school class, and after spring ball is done, wouldn't it make a lot of sense to have a big college football schedule release to get all the fans, get them engaged, and get them excited for the upcoming season? I really think it's a goldmine idea. And I would love to see that implemented somehow, some way. But it's just something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, because I've encountered a lot of people who really tune out of college football and then they start to plug back in about mid-July, right before the season starts in August. So I think it's a really great idea in terms of fan engagement when games aren't being played. Deep breaths, deep breaths. This next thing that I'm going to talk about does not excite me. It does not excite me whatsoever. Once again, the wrong hands are on the wheel when it comes to college football. I know I saw the news that the USC-Notre Dame rivalry is in danger of ending. We have a full-on crisis on our hands. Saw the report from Pat Forty over at Yahoo Sports and Sports Illustrated. As it stands right now, these two teams are scheduled to meet on October 18th in South Bend. USC offered a one-year extension to the contract for the game to be played in 2026. That would take place in Los Angeles. But Notre Dame rejected the offer in hopes of pursuing a more long-term deal. I think it is very important to note that this rivalry has been played 95 times since 1924. It has only been canceled twice. Do you want to know the two reasons why it was canceled? One was a little, I don't know, just a little thing called World War II. That's the reason one of the games was canceled. And the second reason one of the games was canceled was a national pandemic known as COVID-19. So you're telling me that a rivalry that's been played since 1924 has only been canceled twice, been played 95 times, and the two reasons were a global pandemic known as COVID-19 and a national war in World War II, and now they're thinking about ending this thing again because, and I need to get into that reason right now. I don't think that this is Notre Dame's fault. I actually think this has more to do with USC, because it has been clearly seen that if Notre Dame is trying to offer a long-term contract extension, they clearly want to play the game. USC is the one that is, you know, kind of holding back a little bit. Since they've joined the Big Ten and they've had to travel coast to coast to play conference games because someone thought it was a good idea that USC travel cross-country to play Rutgers for a conference game. But the strength of schedule is a little bit different in the Big Ten than it is the Pac-12. USC, having lost six of their last seven to Notre Dame, they're worried about, again, probably competing for a playoff spot. So they're worried about playing too many tough opponents. So there's some hesitation on if this rivalry is going to be played or not. I'm at a loss of words, guys, because are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? College football is literally the backbone of this sport is rivalries. We all enjoy watching it. No one wants to watch cupcake games every week, right? We want to see big primetime games like this. We want to see USC Notre Dame. We want to see Michigan Ohio State. We want to see Florida, Georgia. We want to see Tennessee, Alabama. We want to see all these games, right? And you're telling me that a rivalry that has only been canceled because of COVID-19 and World War II is about to be canceled because you're too scared about losing a game? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Fans have every right to be upset. Every right to be upset. Now, suggestions have been made about, you know, with this rivalry, okay, that they could play each other at the beginning of the year. They could play this game at a neutral site. I don't think I've actually talked about this on this podcast, but neutral site games. Why in the world would we want to play neutral site games between two teams like USC and Notre Dame? We have these great home environments in college football. That's one of the things we all love about this sport are the home environments, the fans playing in opposing stadiums. And neutral site games, what that does is that sanitizes everything that we love about these home environments. I can't stand them. So that is a suggestion that's been made, playing this game at a neutral site, which, both would be a tragedy, to be honest with you. But USC isn't the same USC I remember. No longer in the Pac-12. They might single-handedly cancel a rivalry that I've literally grown up watching my entire existence. I hope this doesn't happen. That's all I have to say. I hope this doesn't happen because it's literally woven into the fabric of what makes college football so great, rivalries like this. And yet, if you think about it, this didn't have to happen, right? We didn't have to have conference realignment. We didn't have to have all of these court cases that are happening at the 11th hour of every other day. But some people, some adults in the room, decided it would be better to have their pockets lined a little bit deeper than ultimately try to benefit college football. As the great Jimmy Dyke says, greed never ends well. So we're just going to have to see how this one plays out. I saw, too, that Georgia and Florida, they're playing they play every year in Jacksonville, their big rivalry. But in 2026, they're going to be playing at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Because the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're having some construction done to their stadium. So while they're having that construction done, Florida and Georgia are going to be moved to Atlanta because, God forbid, we either play at Florida or at Georgia because those home environments are too difficult, right? As college football commissioner, I would eliminate neutral site games, except games like the Rose Bowl because I love the Rose Bowl. And the Cotton Bowl, you know, where Oklahoma and Texas play every year, because I truly believe the Cotton Bowl is one of the greatest venues in all of college football. But I would eliminate these regular season neutral site games because I truly believe that they are terrible. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that. But to some more exciting news, we have some player commitment news. Miami, they landed a big fish in the recruiting era as they got a five-star offensive tackle, Jackson Cantwell. He committed to the Miami Hurricanes a little over a week ago. He's from Nixon, Missouri, 6'7 and a half, 325 pounds, the number 10 overall prospect in the 2026 class, the number 3 offensive tackle, according to 24/7 Sports. He was ultimately down to Miami, Georgia, Oregon, and Ohio State, but he ended up choosing the Canes. And now Miami has the number 9 overall class on 24/7, and Cantwell is the first 5-star to commit. Him and Francis Maui-Goa on the same offensive line, going to be nasty. And Cantwell's a guy that you expect to play right away because you don't go out and you get a recruit like that and then have him sit the bench. He's going to play. I also saw a video of him on Instagram of him close grip bench pressing 475 pounds. Not supposed to do that at that age. So he's going to play right away. He's going to play right away. 5-star linebacker Xavier Griffin decommits from USC. I believe I've talked about USC recruiting a couple times on this show. I know where a lot of you are going to go with this. You're going to say, here they go again, USC not being able to maintain a recruiting class. Even with the loss, did you know that that USC still has the number one overall recruiting class, according to 24/7 Sports? USC is going to lose some guys. I mean, it seems like every class, regardless of school, loses some guys. It just happens. It's part of recruiting. The problem with this, though, is Xavier Griffin. He's from Gainesville, Georgia. USC has had a hard time going out and recruiting outside of their backyard. They've really tried to recruit guys from the South, and it's hard for those guys to stay committed because they have teams that are a little bit closer to home go after them and entice them to come to their school because ultimately they're closer to home. So it's been hard for USC to kind of keep those guys to stay. But Xavier Griffin, he's now crystal balled to Alabama as of right now. But the thing about USC is even if they don't finish with the number one overall class, they're still going to finish with an extremely highly rated class. And a majority of the guys that they have committed, I promise you, are going to stay committed. So that's the good news for USC, even though I know it's never fun losing a five-star commit. Ex-Boise State linebacker Andrew Simpson has committed to North Carolina. He was the number one linebacker in the portal, 45 total tackles, 29 solo, 16 assisted. He also had 3 sacks, 1 interception, and 3 forced fumbles. A huge part of that Bronco defense last year helped them make their run to the college football playoff. He's committed to North Carolina, so Bill Belichick has got a really good piece to add to his linebacker room, and this just goes to show a lot of guys that ball out at the Group of Five level ultimately move up. It's just the way our sport is constructed right now. Now, this isn't player commitment news, although, it kind of is, but Joey Aguilar, you remember the guy that was at UCLA, but is now at the University of Tennessee, the first ever player trade. That's how it was framed. Joey Aguilar is now on campus in Knoxville, and he's getting to work with some of the receivers. Now, most of the receivers go home because they only get a couple of weeks off during the summer. So a lot of them take the opportunity to go back home before they have to come back in June for workouts and practice. There were a couple of receivers that stayed behind to get some reps with Joey Aguilar, which I think is going to be huge because Aguilar missed out on the spring with his new Tennessee teammates. So he's playing catch up, and he's been getting a crash course on the offense as he's been meeting with the coaches, trying to learn as much as he can so he can be as prepared as possible by the time fall camp rolls around. So I also think it's interesting because I'm sure you've heard the name Landry Jones before. He was a really good quarterback at Oklahoma a while ago. Had a stint in the NFL, most notably with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is now an offensive analyst at the University of Tennessee under Josh Heupel. I think that he can have a huge impact on the development of Joey Aguilar because he's on the younger side, so he might be able to explain coaching terms a little bit more simply to where Joey Aguilar can better consume it. So I think that he can have a massive impact on Joey Aguilar's development going into the 2025 season. Now, I told you a couple episodes ago that I'm going to do a preview for a certain team each episode from here on out until we get to the regular season. Arizona State, what should we expect for them in 2025? Did you know that the Sun Devils have the second most returning production in the country? They only trail Clemson, who has 81% of last year's roster returning for this year. Arizona State has 79% of last year's roster returning for this year. Now, on offense, obviously they lost Cam Scataboo, but they returned their quarterback Sam Leavitt and their leading receiver Jordan Tyson, both of which are big-time guys to bring back. They go out and they add running back Kanye Udo from Army to pair with running back Kyson Brown, who was a member of last year's team. Now, Udo had a breakout year last year, had over 1,000 yards on the ground to go along with 10 touchdowns. Army also very ground and pound, but they had a great year last year. Arizona State returns 10 starters from a defense that led the Big 12 and run defense in stopping the run. 112.9 yards per game allowed in the run last year. Arizona State, did you know that they were number 3 in scoring defense? They scored 22.5 points per game on defense. They allowed 22.5 points per game on defense. The biggest question mark I have for Arizona State is the secondary. They gave up a ton of big plays in the passing game last season. They're a team that is going to have to get a lot of pressure on opposing quarterbacks, specifically with that front 7. So it makes things a little bit easier on the secondary, again, who really, really struggled last season. That was probably the biggest weakness for Arizona State. Now, if we're taking a look at their 2025 schedule, their biggest non-conference game is at Mississippi State. Who knows what Mississippi State is going to be this year in year 2 under Jeff Levy. They are at Baylor for their first conference game, which Baylor I think can be a really, really good team this year. They're at TCU the next week, have a bye week. They're at Utah. They're back at home versus Texas Tech. Arizona State and Texas Tech, that's a game that I have circled on my calendar. October 18th, that is going to be a fun one. They're back at home versus Houston the next week. They're at Iowa State and playing at Iowa State. Iowa, November, going to be really cold. We'll see how Arizona State performs in that. They have another bye week. They're back at home versus West Virginia. Then they're on the road at Colorado. And then back at home to play their rival in Arizona. Arizona State's over-under win total, according to FanDuel, is 8.5. But the over-under win total is heavily juiced to the over. Arizona State is currently tied for first place odds with Kansas State, Texas Tech, and Utah to win the Big 12 at plus 600. I like the over for Arizona State. I think that it's going to be really hard considering they're returning that much production from last year's team. They're returning a quarterback who could be a legit Heisman finalist in Sam Leavitt. Now, obviously, they do have to replace Cam Scataboo, but they made a really good addition in the transfer portal in Kanye Udo. Defense returning 10 starters from last year's team. If that secondary can make a big jump, I really like Arizona State. Arizona State and Texas Tech, two teams I'm really high on in the Big 12. But I really am excited for Arizona State. I would take them if I was a betting man. I would take the over on the win total. Okay. One more thing that I wanted to get to on tonight's show, and there's a reason that I'm going to end with this because I think that this is just not going to happen. Is college football moving to pay-per-view? What? Yeah, you heard me right. Is college football moving to pay-per-view? I saw this somewhere on Twitter. I can't even remember who or what said it, but it gained a little bit of traction. Let me just say, if college football was to ever move games to pay-per-view, there would be riots in the streets, and I would be the one leading the riots. Second, this would be astronomically greedy and stupid if this were to happen. Some of you may be listening to this and thinking to yourself, well, UFC does pay-per-view and it seems to work out well for them. Well, that's good for UFC. This is college football. This isn't UFC. I don't think the adults who would make this decision would get the return that they would hope for. Because let me tell you the differences between UFC and college football. UFC, the way that it works is it's usually a standalone event in a given night, right? It's usually what, like, takes place from, I think there are five fights, and it takes place on one night. It goes till 9 p.m. Central Time to a little past midnight the next morning, early the next morning. It's a standalone event. College football, they're literally it's an entire Saturday event, and it's 12 Saturdays in the fall. You can't move that stuff to pay-per-view. I promise you. The people, if this legitimately gained traction, the reason this decision would be made is only because people are trying to squeeze every last cent that they can out of this sport. That's why if it were to happen, that's why these games would get moved to pay-per-view. Ultimately, I think that this is too dumb and too stupid to even happen. That's why I saved it for last. But if this ever happened, trust me, there would be riots in the streets and I would be leading the charge. Really appreciate you listening to the show tonight. Again, I know it's Memorial Day or it's Memorial Day weekend, and I hope you're having a great weekend. I just had to get an episode out because there's so much going on, and it's been a while since the last episode dropped, and I do want to apologize for that. It's been a crazy busy week. But again, college football, it waits for no one, and it never sleeps. That's part of why we're able to do what we do. College football is year-round, and it's great. Still the greatest sport on the face of the earth. Still, college football is super resilient, and even though there's a lot of legalese and a lot of court cases and battles going on in the legal system, Saturdays in the fall still remain Saturdays in the fall, and that's why we love college football. Really appreciate you listening. I promise I'm going to have another episode here for you soon. Please make sure you're subscribed to The Game Nashville. You will never miss an episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. Really appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you soon.